Okay, we got Paul Teller joining us. We got Rabbi Yaakov Menken. We're going to get out. We're going to merge him in a couple of minutes. But let's start with Paul Teller. Paul, thanks for being with us. You're a Jewish man. You've written on Israel. You've followed Israel. You've written on Israeli policy. October 7th, horrible day in Israelis' history. Give us a little flavor here of what you think of Netanyahu, what he's done, and where this is going, Paul Teller.
Well, thanks again. Good morning. Appreciate you having me. Let's face it. Prime Minister Netanyahu has just been a fantastic ally. So strong, so principled, stands in sharp contrast to our current vice president, who can't seem to bring herself to even refer to him as an ally. I mean, can you imagine not being able to refer to the leader of one of the closest nations to America as an ally in its time of war, right on the eve of this anniversary? So right there, it's just completely horrible right there. But the thing I keep thinking of this morning is, here we are a year later. Could you have ever imagined that things would be worse, right? In other words, like, I think all of us thought that, you know, the war back against Gaza would be maybe a few weeks, few months, things like that. Could you have ever in a million years said a year later, Israel's going to be fighting, what is it, a 6 or 7 front war, ballistic missiles coming in from the actual territory of Iran, anti-Semitism outbreaks all over America, including in very legitimately supported places like college campuses where you've got the administrations of colleges saying, yeah, no problem, free speech, go ahead and hate on the Jews, harass them, not a problem. Never would have thought we'd be here. So it's a somber anniversary, but we're very blessed to have allies across America, across the world, who are, you know, standing with Israel, standing with America, standing with the Jews.
Paul, hang on a second. Guys, let's get see if you've got clip 15 ready to go. This is Vice President Harris yesterday, and Paul brought this out, Paul Teller with us, refusing to say that Israel Prime Minister Netanyahu is an ally one day before the anniversary of October 7th, which is basically the worst massacre of Jews since the Holocaust. We have that up, guys?
Do we have a real close ally in Prime Minister Netanyahu?
I think, with all due respect, the better question is, do we have an important alliance between the American people and the Israeli people? And the answer to that question is yes.
Amazing. Amazing.
Are you kidding me?
Just truly amazing.
What is wrong with this?
What is wrong with her?
I mean, they're so scared about alienating these pro-Hamas voters in a couple of states.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's this to me, you listen to that and it's like, you talk about a lack of leadership. It's like, I can't afford to offend my Hamas voters in Michigan. Therefore, I will throw my ally's leader under the bus in order to win a state.
Exactly. And on top of that, I'm sure you saw her tweet from a few days ago where she's glowingly bragging about the fact that the United States will send, I think it was $157 million for humanitarian relief in Lebanon, you know, which again is wrong on two fronts, right? One, you don't send money to the adversaries of an ally in a hot war, like in the moment there. Number two, you may want to check the news, Mrs. Harris. Your own people, Americans, are suffering in North Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, etc., from Hurricane Helene. They need humanitarian relief.
Well, no, they got $750. See, because this is the thing. You got to get back to
it,
Paul. You got to get back to the core of this, and we've got to stop mincing words and just tell the truth. Okay. The reason she's sending money to Lebanon, and the reason she would not say that Prime Minister Netanyahu and Israel is an ally of the United States, is because she doesn't want to jeopardize Muslim Hamas voters in Michigan, period. I mean, that's it. That end of story. Now, the reason why she didn't go to North Carolina or Georgia and they have no money and they gave it to immigrants or whatever, because those voters are no value to them. I mean, that's working trash voters to them. Doesn't matter white or black, Hispanic, they're working class trash. They're trash. They don't vote for them. They don't vote for them. They don't give them any money. You know, they're not part of the elite. They're not wearing two masks. They got dirt under their fingernails. They got calluses on their hands. They punch a clock. They're of no value to these people. No, they'd rather see them replaced with illegals that are going to vote for them. So they continue to give them money. I mean, this is what this whole thing is about. I want to bring in Rabbi Yaakov Menken with us. Rabbi, you're with John and Paul Teller here, anniversary, October 7th. And you got a presidential candidate can't even call Israel an ally. What the hell is going on here?
Yes, first of all, thank you for having me, and thank you for having us both, because I've been listening to Paul nail it for the last few minutes, as he usually does. And
thank you, sir.
He's
a good man.
And it's really good being in an environment where people really know what's flying. And one thing is clear, by the way. Why is she trying to say, oh, no, we're great allies with the people of Israel. We're not great allies. She refuses to say we're allies with Netanyahu. For all relevant purposes, for all the things we've just been talking about, Netanyahu is the Israeli people. Israelis don't have the luxury of being morons like American college students do, because they have a genocidal neighbor on the other side of the border. If they let down their guard, they're faced with genocide. They know that they have to defend themselves. They know that when, after the sheer inhumanity of what Hamas did, anybody who says there are two sides in this conflict is a barbarian who doesn't mind if Jews die. So they know these are not their friends. So all of these people, of course, are with Netanyahu on all of these critical issues. All of the problems that Netanyahu has with keeping his party afloat are not related to these issues, because this stuff is where you've got 95% of the Israelis on one side.
Go ahead and comment on that, Paul.
No, he's 100% right. First of all, we're great allies. Great to be on the radio with you, Rabbi. I appreciate you so much. He's exactly right.
Go ahead, Paul, go ahead, Rabbi.
Let me point out that Paul is actually one of the first people I met in Washington as Coalition for Jewish Values was getting off the ground. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the first people to say, we absolutely need this voice, because people have not been saying the truth. And we were saying the truth in the lead up to October 7th that other Johnny-come-latelys are finally realizing that these groups are anti-Semitic, that Jews actually support value, you know, across the board. Anyway, sorry, Paul. I just wanted to give you a compliment for telling us how necessary we were.
Go ahead. Absolutely. Paul. And the truth is, I don't do anything on the Israel or anti-Semitism issue without checking with the Coalition for Jewish Values. I mean, tremendous resource, great ally, great asset. But yeah, no, I was just going to say that, you know, she's trying to, Vice President Harris is trying to parse the difference between the government and the people, whatever. But again, as Rabbi was saying, you go over there, there is no difference. You know, there is tremendous unity, frankly, even between left, right, and center politically over there now, over the need to destroy Hamas, Hezbollah, the other Iranian proxies, not only ability, you know, to harm Israel, harm Jews, but their will, right? They need to be humiliated into surrender. And that's actually something I talked about in a piece they just published today at JNS, you know, the Jewish News Syndicate, that Iran and its proxies need to surrender. We need to stop talking about ceasefire, like our government is telling Israel, and start talking about surrender of the enemy, and then we can get true peace.
What do you think about that, Rabbi Menken?
Well, again, so Paul and I are going to keep saying this entire interview how right the other one is, because... Yeah. By the way, there's a very nice statement out this morning from Vice President Harris about, you know, remembering October 7 and what Hamas did, and it's all their fault, et cetera, et cetera. And then she says we have to go to release of the hostages and a ceasefire. You know, anybody who knows anything about the Middle East and Hamas in particular knows that for Hamas, a ceasefire means one thing and one thing only: regroup, rearm, and do it again. That rewash, repeat, that is exactly the way Hamas has always operated ever since they wrested control of Gaza from democracy in 2006. And so this is, you know, they're just out to do more murder and mayhem. And anybody who calls for a ceasefire, as Vice President Harris did, without calling for the eradication of Hamas, the terror organization behind this, is calling for them to have the opportunity to reorganize, regroup, and go back and do it again. And obviously, that's not acceptable to any civilized human being. But here we are, where people who are supposedly civilized are completely deluded on something which is kind of basic and obvious when you think about it.
Were either of you gentlemen surprised at the, I don't know what the word is here, it's beyond resolve, at the resolve of Prime Minister Netanyahu to finish this war under all the pressure? I mean, he had disparate advisors on his war council, and so he just disbanded it. He just said, well, you know, goodbye, come back some other time. And he's been under all kinds of heat and pressure from Biden and everybody else to basically soften some of his views. He's not done that. He's been threatened with his government dissolving. It doesn't seem to matter to him. Were either of you surprised by his level of resolve here after all this time he's been in and out of power?
Rabbi, go ahead.
Paul, you want to take it first?
I mean, either way, the truth is, I have a feeling we're going to agree once again. No, not surprised. He's just been a man of courage and strength and conviction his entire life, his entire career. And, you know, this is the kind of thing we, you know, those who have been in the pro-Israel arena for many years have come to know and expect, and so frankly a great honor to have him as the Israeli leader. I only frankly wish the American government, American leadership, was as strong, as convicted, as clear, and as resolved.
What is,
you know,
this
he wiped the floor with Emmanuel Macron of France yesterday.
Oh, did you see that?
That was wonderful.
Absolutely outstanding. He just said Macron had said maybe we should be blocking further arms to Israel while Israel is trying to deal with genocidal adversaries who simply want to murder the Jews. Because, as the French demonstrated in World War II, they are great protectors of Jewish interests. We know that, right? I mean, this is just, he ripped Netanyahu ripped into Macron, in diplomatic language, of course. But basically said, if you're not interested in defending civilization, that's fine. We will do it without you. We will defend civilization without your help. And at the end of the day, when civilization continues to exist, you will, as usual, not say thank you. And that's going to be the French way of doing things. Again, he said it in diplomatic language, but that was the gist of the message. And it was absolutely on point. What the French are doing is absolutely a disgrace. Anybody who thinks, again, there are two sides here is an uncivilized barbarian. I mean, look at what Hamas did. Even the Nazis were ashamed of what they did compared to Hamas, who live streamed, committing horrors that even the Nazis hadn't imagined. This is, you know, these people are so far beyond the pale of civilization. The idea that these people are marching across campus, I hate to say it, we think that, oh, there's a bunch of problems in America. There's a bunch of issues we have to care about. And there's this problem and that problem. And, okay, there's guys on campus who hate Jews. No, they don't. They hate civilization. They're there to tear civilization down. They're there to destroy America. America does not have a bigger problem than the idea that country and all that it stands for.
All right. You're on the John Trotter's Media Network, Trucking the Truth Across America. We're with Paul Teller, who has been commenting and writing about.
Yet?
No, we're still here. The Israeli situation for a very long time. We're also joined on this anniversary, October 7th, 1 year anniversary of the Israeli massacre by Hamas, by Rabbi Yaakov Menken, who's been on my show many, many times. Paul, what does victory look like? If you're Netanyahu, if you're the Israeli command center right now, what does victory look like? Define it for us, Paul.
No, absolutely. And first of all, let me admit, I am certainly no military commander, so the folks there would know certainly the details better than me. But from, you know, here in our perch in D.C., it certainly seems like victory could come from true Iranian and its proxy surrender, laying down its arms and, basically adhering to some Israeli control in the Palestinian territories, further into Lebanon than it's got, you know, that it's had control before. Point being, some sort of future where they can't just kind of regroup, rearm, and do this again next week. So some sort of total surrender, some sort of Israeli control over the territories from which the attacks are being launched as we speak.
Let me toss that to Rabbi. What does victory look like? I think we don't have the Rabbi. I think we
we do have the Rabbi.
Oh, there he is.
I don't know what happened there. Where was I in my little rant there when I disappeared?
Yeah, well, we got you back. What does victory look like? Define it for us, for Israel.
Well, victory is peace. That's what Israel has always wanted and always sued for. There is one side here that actually wants peace. The other side is using peace as a prop for their next round of trying to destroy Israel. So peace in this case means eradicating terrorism, eradicating the genocidal groups that simply want to murder as many Israelis as possible. You don't leave members of Hamas around and call that peace. You don't leave members of Hezbollah around and call that peace. You know, if the Iranians keep it up, you force regime change in Iran or you'll never have peace. You know, sometimes having peace requires waging war. So as the Americans knew very well through two world wars. So let's stop pretending that there's a different standard when it comes to Jews. If you want peace, you have to get rid of the people who want to murder and dominate.
Basically, that is a nice way of saying you want to eradicate the enemy, right? Because that's the only way you're going to get peace, right? I mean, when you're fighting somebody who says, my objective is to kill Jews and you're a Jew, how do you get peace? What does peace look like without that person that's saying they want to kill you not being in a position to carry out their wish? Does that make sense? You
know, let's be careful and understand. Hamas is not an ethnicity. Hezbollah is not an ethnicity. These are terror organizations. You want to not be a part of the terror organization, you renounce your membership and walk away. It's that easy. So the idea that these, again, it's the idiots on campus, claiming Israel is genocidal for working to get rid of people who actually seek the genocide of the Jews. It's classic anti-Semitic projection. Idea, you accuse Israel of genocide. Anybody who says that is actually a genocidal barbarian. They want genocide. They're calling what Israel is doing to get rid of the genocidal. Sorry.
Go ahead, Paul. Weigh in. I'm running out of time. Paul Teller, go ahead.
No, 100% correct. You know, there needs to also be some sort of humiliation involved, right? A true defeat of a murderous enemy, that enemy has to be humiliated. And, you know, obviously we keep going back to the best example, the Germans, right? World War II and the Japanese, right? It wasn't just that we took some islands, killed some people. There was a humiliation involved, which takes away, again, the ability and the will to keep fighting and to keep, proceeding with their expansionist, tyrannical hate and killing on their side. So I think we've got to have that, and that could come with surrender, right? That surrender, you know, is a form of humiliation. It's just, laying down your arms and stuff like that. But they don't want to do that. Great. Then Israel's going to proceed with its military campaigns as well it should.
Well, a lot of people don't believe. Go ahead, Rabbi.
Interesting the parallel there, because today you call a person a Nazi, it's the worst epithet imaginable, including in Germany, especially in Germany. Nobody wants to be called a Nazi, at least most civilized human beings. In a generation, to be called, be one of the backers of Hamas today, it's not going to be any different. Don't think for a minute that these students marching to campus, sympathizing with Hamas, are going to be thought of as decent human beings in a generation or two from now. That's not how this works. Every time you look over your shoulder at the anti-Semites of previous generations, they're evil. They're barbaric. They were absolutely demonic individuals. Good. Let's line up with them now. Great idea, guys.
Let's get to politics, Paul Teller. What impact is this going to have on the Jewish vote for the Democrats? I mean, I've been asking this question now for 12 months, ever since October 7th. Like, if you're a Jew and you're voting for these people, you got to have your head examined. Like what? And I get the whole Democrat thing, and you've been a Democrat forever. Okay, but you've also voted on Election Day forever, and now we're imploring you to vote early so we don't get beat. What is going to compel a Jew to vote for the people that want to destroy their ethnicity? Why would you go in there and say, I'm going to vote for Harris so they continue to, not Harris specifically, but they can continue to pursue policies to eradicate my family, I guess. I mean, walk us through the mind of the Jew Democrat voter. I'm trying to get to the bottom of this, Paul.
Yeah, like, I mean,
help me.
No, the truth is, if I had the total explanation, right, we could really work towards flipping everybody. But I think what it really comes down to, first of all, I do think we're going to flip some. There will be some that will either vote Republican or abstain from voting Democrat, where in the past they would have, that kind of thing. I don't think it's going to be a tremendous amount, and I'd be curious to the rabbi's thoughts as well, but the reason I don't think it's going to be overwhelming, as we might expect, is for many Jews, especially on the left, Israel is a much lower down the list issue for them. And even while anti-Semitism maybe is a little bit higher than Israel, it doesn't affect a lot of them in their day-to-day life. And issues like abortion, climate change, et cetera, are much higher on the list for many of those Jews on the left. And I hate to say it, but I think they'll vote more on those issues and less on Israel and anti-Semitism.
Rabbi?
I think the vote is much more in play than people are imagining, meaning Shabbos Kestenbaum, Bill Ackman, blanked the name, the Harvard professor. Alan Dershowitz saying his vote is in play. This is a really big deal. The Jewish Democratic Council of America, of course, wants to paper this over and claim that, oh, we did a survey showing that the support for Kamala amongst Jews is just as high as it was for Biden 4 years ago and 8 years ago for Clinton. Well, reality strikes when you look at the details and the questions they were asked and how they were coached, because the quote unquote Jews answering that survey decided that saving democracy was a much more important issue to them than the lives of Jews in Israel. I mean, that's the voter that they're going after. That's their demographic when they claim that Jews are still supporting Kamala. These are Jews who really care more about democratic talking points than about the lives of Jews in Israel. With sanity, again, the Shabbos Kestenbaums, the Bill Ackmans, they're realizing that there's an entirely different list of items at stake in this election. Again, the acceptance, the surprise about, again, Netanyahu, none of us were surprised, but the endorsement of Hamas on college campus, you would have thought they'd be a little bit embarrassed about supporting a group that rapes women. They're supposed to be pro-women. You would think that they'd be a little bit embarrassed about supporting a group that actually beheaded and burned babies to death. But nope, they're all in favor. And you would think they have a little compassion for people being held hostage today. No, they're ripping those down. So this level of barbarism going on here in America, and one party coddling to that and the other rejecting it entirely, it's kind of obvious where a decent person needs to vote. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's right.
And by the way, I am now a registered Democrat because I live in the People's Democratic Republic of Baltimore. you never notice that a People's Democratic Republic is none of those things? Anytime they say People's Democratic Republic, you know you're dealing with totalitarian one-party rule. And so if you want to have a say in Baltimore City, you have to vote on the Democratic primary. But when it comes to the general, you know where I'm voting. I don't care. I mean, Maryland's a lost cause, but so what? There's no way that I could put a vote in for Kamala. Sorry to
Rabbi,
say.
Rabbi Megan, we're out of time. Rabbi Megan, you can follow him, Coalition for Jewish Values. CoalitionForJewishValues.com. Paul Teller with us. Paul, people want to follow you. Where do they go, Paul?
Absolutely. AdvancingAmericanFreedom.com. AdvancingAmericanFreedom.com. Thank you for having us on. Really appreciate it. Great.
Hey, Paul Teller and Rabbi Yakov Megan. It's a great panel. Great job. And I know I kind of sprung it on you guys.
AAF is great people. They really
are. I know I kind of sprung it on you guys, but I love it.
That's all right.
I love when things are organic. You gotta be organic on this show, right?
That's right. That's right.
We don't pre-plan. We don't
pre-plan. Just keep trucking
anything.
The truth.
Hey, very good, Rabbi. You got my little thing down.
The Godzilla of truth has spoken.
Rabbi Menken, I like that, man. Doing my narrative there. Doing our branding.
What they tell me I have a face for radio.
Oh, God, we got to have you guys on every week. Christine, my political director, said, I think we're on to something here. You guys got to come on together every week. You guys are good because I'm still trying to get in the mind of the Jewish Democrat voter. I keep asking the same. I figure one day Rabbi would give me a different answer. I keep getting the same answer. Like, no one knows. Like, it would be like, I'm a Catholic, okay? This would be like, you know, The some group has overrun the Catholic Church. They killed the Pope. You know, they destroyed the Vatican. And, you know, the Democrats, there's a U.S. candidate, a Democratic candidate saying, well, you know, Pope's no good anyway. And Catholics, really, they're a problem. They got to go. No, Catholics, they shouldn't defend themselves either. And those Swiss guys defending them, they're no good. And I'm going to go out and... Well, let's vote for them so they can murder me. I mean, it's like, well, like, why would I do that?
I know.
It's just, I don't get it. I do not. Well, look, I don't get any of the, other than the Karens with the two masks and the cars with the windows rolled up. I just don't get any of them.